Again, it's obviously the end of the week will be exciting time. You know, the fact that the players are back in here beginning work on the 21st, and so we're into the, I guess, third week of the off-season program, the first week of the phase two part of the program. So a chance for the coaches to spend time on the field with the players. So that's been great and fun to see and have an opportunity to do. As we go into the draft, you know, it's kind of the culmination of all the work that the personnel staff has put in, you know, from the time they left us in training camp last year, literally last spring prior to, and then, you know, as they go to make their school calls and school visits and evaluations through when they leave us in training camp all the way through the fall, come in here and have meetings during the end of the football season, after they're done with the collegiate season, on into January and so forth, the bowl games and so forth, and then to the cross-checking and so forth of the junior players once the combine was through, so that entered the draft, which we know this year was a record number. So it really is. And then from that point on, the involvement of the coaches from, the combine on, and having the chance to get them out to four or five places to see players, but all the tape evaluation as they can at their position. And then, you know, going through the meetings and so forth that we've been through over the last 3.5 weeks. Thursday is kind of the kickoff of that, and an exciting time to get it going and get us closer to doing real football here pretty quick with that.
With the date change of the draft being pushed back, how has that affected your preparation?
Well, I prefer to have the draft done where it was in April, because now this is in a little bit in the way of football, because this is time when we would be spending more time with the players, and now we're going back and forth between both because of that, you know. So we're you want to be finishing up the draft preparation prior to the draft. You don't want to have it finished up 2 weeks earlier because of guys that have been injured and so forth are still doing workouts and so forth, evaluations and so forth of us bringing guys in. So I think the calendar the way it is this year presents problems for the football side of things, because this is the time that we should be spending with the players. Secondly, it takes away an opportunity for the rookies, because now once they can actually come here for our off-season program when they begin, you know, after the draft next week. So I thought there was a good, as far as teaching goes, it's a great progression to have an opportunity for them to come and spend time in a rookie camp, have an opportunity to go home for a bit and absorb what they got exposed to, and then come back with the other players and to have the second time around. And to me, that's a much better teaching progression. So then they get it again a third time when we go to training camp. So they should have things locked down. So we're kind of skipping a step of that now, because there's no reason to come bring these guys back in next week and then overwork them the next weekend, because then they're going to be the first guys that have all the soft tissue injuries. And so we're going to skip that step in the process here.
In a perfect world, after the combine, how much time do you need,
Well, there's going to be some time that needs to be spent. These guys are in school, hopefully. You know, we want them to still be in school. And, you want them to have an opportunity to have the campus workouts and so forth. And that's going to have to be around the school spring ball schedule and so forth. So they're kind of a little bit at the mercy of their institution. Because, you know, in a perfect world for us as the league, we prefer these guys stay on their campus and so forth. You know, all these guys, we're spending all this money to go to all these other facilities to work out and everything. And the strength coach that they've had there for 2, 3, or 4 years, now they're leaving that guy to go somewhere else. And I think for some guys, maybe there is a little benefit, but for the most part, really, it's wasted dollars.
What can you do with those rookies to help them deal with the missed first step?
Well, we're going to spend a little time with them after the fact. Either before or after next week, we're going to begin to spend some extra time. We're going to carve out some extra time with them, with their position coaches and so forth. So,
it seems like every draft, there's a million people they're going to trade. it's easy to talk about. You need two
parts. Well, it gives people something to talk about,
right,
Dave.
Do you think, though, that this draft potentially there could be more movement than in the past?
I have no idea. I don't, I think that if certain positions and players stay on the board a little longer and than people anticipated, and you know have a craving for that position later on, you know, and you want to move back to get it, then yes. Or people wanting to move back out of it, I don't know, for someone to come up and get a particular player. So I think you have to see how it unfolds to begin with. And I think once you get into the first 5-6 picks, you know, I think everybody will have an idea. Just like a year ago when the offensive linemen began to go off the board, defensive linemen went off the draft board the way they did. Then I think it kind of set the table for the rest of it. Well, it's not really stressful, but it's like watching paint dry. You know, we've got far too much time. And, you know, you're going to do the evaluation, and you want the evaluation to sit, to always work through the same profile of our criteria. You know, basically, is personality, ability, and future. And how he fits. So as long as I think we stay to that, you know, you're pretty good with it. But we do have to wait our turn and then pick the next player. And I think in that process, you know, it gets a little long, drawn out. But, you know, it has been made. The NFL is what it is because of television and so forth. And we are certainly, this is a made-for-TV event.
Fair to say you would not be in favor of it expanding an extra day?
Really doesn't matter what I think. So really, you know, because obviously it didn't need to be 3 days.
Coach, when you talk about profile, what do you think is the Bengals profile?
Well, I don't know if it's Bengals profile, but we want a guy that number one we can count on, and we got to be, you know, that's the hardest part of the evaluation, is a guy that we can count on. And that means having the ability to stay here, the ability to be proficient here, and then have the personality to be able to do it. So that's probably and that's where you got to spend the time, whether it's personality, past, future, and then ability.
Can you categorize this draft? I mean, a lot of times people say, "Oh man, there are 10 players in this draft, and a real big drop off." No, there's depth in this draft. What's your feeling about this draft overall?
Well, I don't know that really it is proper to say this is what the pool of players is this year for us and the other 31 clubs. So that's all that really matters. So that's we're going to draft from this thing, and the pool of players will feel really good about it. We're going to add some good young quality players. They're going to come in here and they're going to make this football team better. They make it better through the competitiveness they add, for their athleticism and playmaking ability that they bring to the table. And as they mature and go, you know, we'll feel good about it. If, you know, knock on wood here, but hopefully, as we have in the past, these guys don't have to come in and step in as be necessarily a day one starter for us. And that's another good thing. And they have an opportunity. I mean, these guys are likely to push somebody out of the door that had a job last year. And so that's what they have to do. They have to come in here and compete and make us better. And by doing that, they're going to unseat somebody that was probably here last year on the football team. And now we've improved our football squad. And I think that's what we aim to do, you know, with these guys, to add the competitiveness, add the depth. And then, you know, through youth, you know, this is still a young man's game. And even though the better players in the league continue to seem to play a little longer, but we got to have the, you know, we got to keep having the evolution and so forth, evolve. These young guys evolve and develop into players and continue that cycle all the time.
You talked a lot about the roster competition, making your team better, having that kind of competitiveness and that kind of depth. Is it different with a quarterback where you just want one guy, one voice for the team?
I really think it's different with the quarterback because we don't have enough reps. You can't give that guy enough opportunity to do what he needs to do to make a fair comparison. And we're not going to take reps away from Andy Dalton to give somebody else another opportunity to do that. And it's only fair to the rest of the football team that if I'm going to put you in place as the quarterback or competing quarterback, that I give you enough reps to be good enough for the football team to win with you. and I think that's important. I've believed that it's worked pretty well for us, that I haven't had that kind of confusion. This football team has known who their quarterback's going to be and the leader of it, and it's made us better for that, because they can get behind him and rally behind him, and he can rally them.
Is that an advantage, having a guy like Jason Campbell set up as your backup, is that maybe he doesn't need those kind of practice reps?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, that's one of the attractions to Jason, with Jason and Josh. You know, they've been in that situation, and they understand what the meaning of that situation is and why. And so they've got to have the maturity to, if they have to go in and play, they're ready to go. So they've got to approach their preparation each and every week as though they are the guy, but yet they're you know, whoever ends up being in the second chair, you know, they understand the responsibility of that chair as well.
Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, all the draft gurus do about 1,000 mock drafts every hour. There's mock draft 52 or whatever it is. How many mock drafts do you, as an organization, you know, do as you're preparing for draft day?
My boss, Mike Brown, he gets a mock draft about every hour.
He plays the devil advocate.
Constantly, so and I think that's, you know, it's a good thing, because he, you know, if this guy is not available, if these players are all gone, and we're looking at this pool of players, which player do you prefer and why? And I think that's the scenario you've got to go through. So, it's important for he and I always to be on the same page that way, and I feel like we are, and he knows how I feel. So ultimately, when he turns in the pick, based on the guys that are left, when we discuss it, we'll discuss it again in the room, and we'll discuss it again later today, tomorrow. What's tomorrow? Wednesday? Thursday? You know, so we've got a few more times to discuss it, but he knows how I feel, and whatever pick we turn in, we'll make him the best player he can be.
And with it being the bottom quarter of the draft, I mean, there's obviously a million scenarios. I mean, you can't do them. Enough mock drafts to cover everything. Probably.
Well, no, but you rate the guys, Dave, and that's all we're going to do. We rate the guys, and we're going to number them and put them in an order that's best for us, and you know, and make sure we stick to that. That's the key thing, is we want to make sure throughout the day, the 3 days, that we get the best player that we have done the work on as far as evaluation, and that he's healthy and can play for a while. You know what I mean? And I think that's the things that sometimes the outliers don't understand. They don't know the physical grades. They don't know the mental aptitude and so forth that the player has. And, you know, that we've spent time on, whether it be through the personnel staff or the guy visiting here or one of our coaches visiting with the player on his campus. And we've got to, you know, that's important to me as well.
When you look at your roster, you have four first-round corners that are your top four corners right now. What is it about cornerbacks that you like first-round guys so much?
Well, it's one of the toughest quarterbacks and cornerbacks, the toughest position to play in the league. And if you're not good enough there, everyone else suffers. And there's no way to mask it. And it takes certain rare ability to play those two spots and to play cornerback on defense, to run with a guy that's bigger, can be bigger than you, can be faster than you, knows where he's going, and you've got to run with him and you've got to defend him and you can't touch him. Other than that, it's an easy job. And when everybody sees when that guy catches a ball on you, everybody looks at you, even though somebody else probably didn't do their job as well as they needed to as well. But everybody looks at you. So that's a tough position. And I've been fortunate in the league to be around a bunch of good corners, and most of them came in the first round. And so I feel pretty good about that.
Is safety becoming that now because of the way the league's changed?
Well, I've been that way philosophically for a while. It's through my upbringing and so forth in the NFL where we've had safeties that way that could do that. And we've been that way since I've been here. And the trend will continue that way right now, because the trend in college football is that way. And so these guys are becoming more as big corners, the style of coverage, the style of offense, and the things that people are playing. So the game is evolving that way a little bit more.
The draft is only seven rounds, whereas, I mean, back in the 70s, 17 rounds. So, I mean, you got a lot of good football players that don't get drafted, and you guys have a reputation, deservedly so, of doing a great job with that group of guys. What's been the key to success, you know, after the seven rounds were over, getting quality football players?
I think that, Dave, to try to why, you know, what stands out about this player? And is he going to have an opportunity here? Because we don't want to, you know, chase our tail in certain areas if the guy's not going to get a true opportunity, because that's going to alienate the agent and it's going to make it hard for us in the future. But because, like you said, we have given guys opportunity, and these guys have not only made the football team, but they've been productive members of the team, whether it be here or elsewhere. When we go after and try to recruit a college free agent after the draft, he knows he's going to get an opportunity to play. And they know they're going to get a chance to play in preseason games and showcase their talent. And as I said, once they walk in this auditorium here, it doesn't matter how they got here. It's what they do once they're here and continue to do to keep earning their opportunity to stay here. And that's the most important thing. And so whether, you know, they're going to get a chance, they may not, maybe the numbers don't work for them here, but if they've had an opportunity to go out there and put themselves on tape, they get a chance somewhere else across the league. Can't do that, Butch. You're not allowed to do that. That'd be breaking the rules. The media guys, you know, you don't have rules to follow. Internet guys. How did we get Vontaze? Well, it's been written many times that his agent asked me if we were going to draft him, and I said, no, we won't draft him. And he said, well, if he's not drafted, would you be interested in him after the draft? And I said, likely. And I told Paul, I got your free one. If he's not drafted, I got one for free for you.
So what happened after the draft?
After the draft, I called the agent on the phone, or he called me and said, do you still want Vontaze? Yes. And I went to Katie, and I squeezed $1,000 out of Katie to give him some summer spending money.
So Paul, you didn't have to do anything.
Huh? No, that was an easy one.
So what is your strategy with that 1 hour land rush that occurs when the draft ends? What is your strategy to get the guys that you want and know when to move on?
Well, the position coach has got to, you know, he's keeping track. You know, he's got he's got to have a feel, and the area scouts, they have a feel for, you know, this is a good fit for us. This is what we're looking for. And we spent some time on it this morning. And that, you know, these are likely guys, if they don't get drafted, this is where we'd like to go. And, you know, but the physical part of it's got to be important too, because we want guys that are healthy. And then, you know, turning the focus as soon as the last compensatory pick is made, that we, you know, turn our focus onto those guys and try and give them opportunity. You know, there's no rhyme nor reason to how much you pay the guy, whether you give the guy a $10,000 signing bonus, zero signing bonus, or a $1,000 signing bonus. You know, there's really, you know, we do studies every year. And for those, you know, 500 players that go that way, it doesn't really matter. But the thing is opportunity. And hopefully we've shown guys over time that agents understand these kids are going to get an opportunity here, because I'm committing myself to giving them an opportunity. And a lot of times I've seen the guy on tape. So when the coach has the guy on the line, has the player on the line or the agent, I can comment. I've seen you. I know, you know, we wouldn't be calling you. They wouldn't have me talk to you if you wouldn't have a good opportunity here to make it here either on our roster or the practice squad. Or they wouldn't have me talk to you on the phone.
So your relationship with the agents is real important. I mean, they know you're honest. They can trust you.
Yeah, I think it's very important.
Your track record shows that what you say, you know, mm-hmm. happens. And so, I mean, you built that up. Is that the most important thing?
I think that's a big part of it, because, you know, you have guys calling you. You know, now they're looking at trying to see, you know, how many guys you got and so forth. And, you know, if you picked a guy at that position, I think that's something that's always important for them too.
Yeah. You drafted Andy in the second round, immediately successful. Wilson, third round, immediately successful with Seattle. Kaepernick, second round, almost immediately successful with San Fran. Do you think that's had an impact on how teams are going to draft quarterbacks?
No, I think the teams are still going to draft the player. And I think based on what they thought is the overall value of things, I think that what is demonstrated obviously by Russell Wilson and Colin, Andy, is their maturity as people and players. and how they've handled the situation. And, you know, they were expecting to go in that first round, and they didn't. But you know what? They got an opportunity. They made good on the opportunity. And I think to that, all three guys, they carry themselves that way, and that's a good thing. And you know, I mean, Russell Wilson, I mean, you know – his track record speaks for itself. From transferring from North Carolina State up to Wisconsin, to what he did and how he's carried himself throughout the whole thing has been outstanding. Anything else?